This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
You're now in the Essential Zone, where we seek to be informative, inspirational, enlightening, and dynamic. But more importantly, we seek to be fair and balanced. There comes a time when the game tolerates no spectators, only players. There comes a time when we must recognize that our individual aspirations shape our collective destiny. There comes a time when getting in the game, despite the risks, despite the challenges, regardless of the cost, is simply the right thing to do. There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, for humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes, there comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. The essentials. Serious radio for serious people committed to advancing the national conversation. And good evening and welcome to The Essentials. This is your host, Hubert Edwards. And if you've been listening to the radio, you know that 30 minutes ago I was on. So we're pulling a marathon today, but certainly there is work to be done. And so we are here doing that. We're going to have a conversation again with someone totally different this time. We are going to be speaking with Mr. Jeffrey Beckles, former CEO of the Chamber of Commerce and now CEO of Island Pay, an individual who, generally speaking, has his hands on the pulse of the country. And we're going to talk about some things. It's going to be a little bit different. I'm not going to be the typical interviewer today. It's more of a fireside chat. We're going to have a chat between two friends, a chat between two colleagues, just to have a sense of what is happening. As we look around the world today, a multiplicity of issues are emerging. As we look within the borders of the Bahamas, we see many, many issues which are coming to the fore. Issues of immigration, issues of the rising in the number of COVID cases. We are discussing issues around the potential for election. We know that there are issues as it relates to the economic state and the level of debt and the debt plans and the borrowing plans and their pronouncement and opinions and pundits, and everyone really has a position. And it's always good to be in an environment so rich with various views and various perspectives, because it's within that environment, I think, you have the greatest chance of learning, the greatest chance of taking your own original view and feel the pressure of it from other maybe opposing or complementary views. And using those to refine and refresh and restate, and then obviously come into a point where you're now comfortable. Doesn't mean that you're right. It just means that you have a better hold, more commitment, more confident in the position that you now have as opposed to the one that you originally have. But it's really important to engage in conversation, and part and parcel of what we do in what I refer to as this experiment called democracy is to engage in such. And we try to do that with individuals who have a view, who have an opinion, who have something to say. And we want to hear from everyone. We want to hear your input. And so if you want to join us this evening, the numbers are 323-6232. 325-4316 and 325-4259. You may also reach us on our text line, which is 422-4796. We want to hear from you. What are your views? How do you see the election? How do you see our economic state? Do you have a view on the COVID crisis? Do you have a view on the state of our healthcare? What about what is happening in the United States? Corporation tax, minimum corporation tax. Biden has really copped a day in that. Effectively, pretty much most of the world is now agreeing or in agreement with something which have the potential to fundamentally change the Bahamas financial services as we know it. What are your views on those things? As you go to the newspaper, you see statements or pronouncements from individuals who are on the front line and individuals who were on the front line. We see an umbrella organization emerging or potentially emerging for tourism-related business. Ministry of Environment confirms oil drilling licenses have expired. And the Attorney General is saying that we won't move on corporate tax until the rest of the world moves. Where are you with that? And so we want to invite into the conversation, to the fireside, Mr. Jeffrey Beckles. Welcome back to The Essentials.
Good evening, Hubert, Mr. Marathon Man, the latest and newest Marathon Man. Good evening, Bahamas. Good to be with you as always. And let me extend my congratulations to you for the continuance of your program, a very useful and dynamic program. And I'm sure the other listeners would agree that your presence is greatly appreciated. So good evening and great to be with you.
I certainly appreciate it. You know, we had our essentials. It used to be on Sundays, then it went to Sundays and Thursdays. Then Thursday went away and then Sunday went away. And now we are back on a Thursday. Life is very dynamic.
It is indeed.
It's very messy in the kitchen. But for the most part, when we bring out the six-course meal, we do that for your total enjoyment. You don't need to know what's happening in the kitchen. All you need to be in a position to enjoy this. So, Jeff, let's talk. You know, I'm not going to interview you. I'm simply going to have a conversation with you. So feel free at any point in time to poke as much question at me as I will at you. I want to start, though, at the place where I think we must start, and that's COVID. The COVID crisis has shown us a number of vulnerabilities of the country. And it has given us maybe a better understanding, a better grasp of the working from an economic point of view of our country. We now fully understand and appreciate how substantial and substantive tourism is to our well-being. But an era that we do not often talk about in this whole dilemma, this pandemic, is the impact that this is having on social and family life. As you, an individual, you're born, you grew up here, you have the advantage of knowing way more persons than me. And sometimes the disadvantage of knowing way more persons than me because they get sick. Some persons die, and you have to go through that whole process, having more family members close to you and so on and so forth. Talk to us about, you know, your views, your reflection on the whole social and family life aspect or impact of this crisis.
Wow, that too is a very loaded question and one that I certainly appreciate, and I'll do my best in that regard. Having maintained a very active role in my local church, in my community life as a Rotarian, with my business life, being involved with small businesses, and really coming from a history of being born and raised in Chippingham, knowing the neighborhood like I do and the surrounding areas, it has given me the ability to remain very much connected to the ground level, the day-to-day experiences of the everyday person in the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. And then I couple that with my experience in living in Grand Bahama for more than two decades, an understanding from East to West End, the day-to-day challenges of the average Bahamian, right? You're right, COVID has had an enormous impact on us. And we have spent a lot of our time talking about the economics of it and the recovery of it. But the truth be told, there are some equally important areas that we have not really focused on in the short term, and thereby gives us cause for concern for the medium and the longer term. What do I mean by that? You mentioned the social challenges that have, the social fallout, and the disenfranchisement of those who have already been marginalized and the impact on them. And I think we see that in a very real way when we talk about the extraordinary work that's done by the various feeding networks, where we have 130,000 Bahamians on a food program, right? While we did have a significant number before COVID, the fact of the matter is more than 25% of our population is now on our feeding program. And that's only those persons who have registered. This doesn't account for those persons who, for whatever reasons, have not signed up or are participating. We do know that there are 130,000 persons who are in need of weekly food support. What that does is it not only stretches the capacity of our social network, but it exposes the extent to which many Bahamians are vulnerable. And by the way, let me just also add, I don't know to what extent that has taken into account all of the expanse of the Bahamas,
right,
down to Inagua, Bimini to Inagua. So the reality of it is, though, this COVID environment has produced significant pressures. Now, there are family breadwinners in that 130,000.
Mm-hmm.
There are fathers and mothers and children and grandchildren,
So
all involved. And that is this impact has run the gamut of age. It has no discrimination. It has no discrimination in class, because there are people on our programs who never thought they would be there, but life happens.
Yeah.
So we have a serious challenge as Bahamians to get in front of this issue of the burden that has been placed on us due to this COVID environment on our social network, our social resources. They are stretched thin. So yes, it has. Another area.
Yeah, before you go, Jeff, I'm just thinking as you play this out, and you touch on a very important aspect of this discussion. So the main breadwinners have been impacted, individuals who normally, based on their maybe socioeconomic circumstances, real or perceived, are on the breadline, basically. And so the dynamics of the community has shifted. In many instances, while we open, we pray for the best, I think prudent understanding suggests that it will not come back 100%.
It won't.
And when you have a situation where 25% or 400,000 persons in the population, 130 is on a food assistance program, and that doesn't take into account the type of programs which may be outside of that formal system, you know, through other churches or so on and so forth. It becomes serious. It becomes important that we start to look beyond, you know, the debt and beyond the big chunky economic issues, and start asking ourselves, what type of economic scarring is going to be created as a result of pandemic? And like you said, how do we get ahead of that so that we can best prepare for those individuals who before now were okay, but will definitely find themselves falling below the poverty line?
Well, I think that's the greatest question and demand that will come out of this scenario, because if you think about it, it's going to take us some time to get our economic house in order. We know that. But these Bahamians, our brothers and our sisters, are going to be with us for the long haul, right? So it's incumbent upon us, not just as a government, but as families and as communities, to make ourselves a part of the medium and longer term solution, because at the end of the day, I find it difficult to believe that out of a country of 400,000 people, you got 100,000 of them affected. You and I know some of them.
Yes.
That's one in four, right? Mm-hmm. So, and the small country we are. So the reality of it is these are family members. These are great people. These are our neighbors. These are the people we went to school with, people we, our children go to school with, people we worked with. So it's going to require a literal community effort in order to do it, in order to sustain this effort in the longer haul. We know that government resources are stretched as they are and have been and will continue in the shorter term. The reality of it, though, this is where the Bahamas as a unit, as a country, as a people, must put their money where our collective mouths are and be truly drawn to becoming neighbor's keepers, being able to care about our neighbors and being able to do the things necessary to help them out. Because it's a lot more than clothing. It's a lot more than shoes. We have to find a way, yes, to feed them, but we must also find a way to protect their dignity of Bahamians. Because, listen, there is nothing more distressing than not knowing where to find a piece of food, mm-hmm. right? We didn't grow up with much. I mean, I can tell you about tough times, right?
I thought you grew up in the Bahamas.
Pardon?
I said, I thought you grew up in the Bahamas. You keep saying that.
Well, I'm a citizen of the Bahamas, and that, so now I've become like a global Bahamian, right, in the Bahamas. But the reality of it is we knew what that looked like, but it's changed in that growing up poor is one thing, but growing up in an environment where you would have had, and then all of a sudden you don't have, yeah. That's a different experience. That's a different pressure. That doesn't just go to your stomach. It goes to your psychological and emotional well-being. And I think when we think about this, this is not just about putting a can of food in somebody's basket. It's about how do we recognize the impact of this scenario on that person's psyche. Mm-hmm. His emotional well-being, his psychological well-being, and how do we recognize and figure out ways to recognize that, yes, but to support them, yes, and to help them to evolve out of this very serious dilemma that they're in. So it's not just a corned beef and grits or corned beef and white rice response. Right. It's about our ability now to respond to the whole person, because as we said, there are breadwinners in that group. There are single mothers and fathers in that group. There are grandparents in that group. There are teenagers in that group. There are children in that group. So this scenario is strange to them, because 2 years ago, while that number may have been 40,000, mm-hmm. it's tripled now.
Yeah, to 100 plus. But, you know, Jeff, as you mentioned, the whole idea of thinking through this crisis from the perspective of the whole human person. In the first instance, a crisis demands you to do what is necessary. And the necessary things is in the main to keep people alive. So, you know, persons are more responsive to their physiological needs. The psychological needs, the thing which impact duty and self-worth and self-confidence, these are things which we do not always give due pause to. Mm. We do not always consider, but they do impact the human being. Now, beyond the social realm, this have a cascading impact on the work life. Because work as we know it, work as we knew it is going to be fundamentally and radically changed, whether we want to admit it, yes or no. I think there are pockets, there are individuals in the Bahamas today whose stance is, it's going to come back, and it's going to come back, and it's going to come back. And so it's like the tide. We know that the tide goes out at X point in time in the morning, and we know that it comes back.
It's going to come back.
So it's true. It's going to come back. The question on the uncertainty is, why we walk the beach from time to time. What exactly is the tide bringing back in this time? Is it coming back with the same old, or is there going to be a fundamental shift in expectation, in facility, in what is available, especially on the employment front? Talk to me about, you know, how you see that.
That's one of the change dynamics. I can say initially that it's not going to come back as it was. It's going to be change, and it's going to be not just a single change. It's going to be a series of changes, and I'll tie them together as best I can like this. We just finished talking about the psychological and emotional trauma that individuals have gone through, and we only talked about those persons who were the feeding program. But the other tens of thousands of Bahamians who have been literally out of work for the last 14 months, right, have gone through a significant shift in their own view of themselves, self-worth, and bills are piling up. They've used up all of their savings. They don't know where the other penny was going to come from, right? And so notwithstanding all of the other efforts that have been made to look after folk in this state, the reality of it is many of those persons have been called back to work. But now, guess what? Returning to work, Hubert, is not going to be the healing that they need, because just going back to work now lends some other challenges, because now I have to get my mind back in order. Mm-hmm. I've got to get my emotions back in order. I have to think about how am I going to compartmentalize all the challenges that I've faced, backed up. You know, there are things that I needed to do that I couldn't do. How am I going to now? I've got to take this person, and I've got to get myself ready, work ready, as it were. And then, as I go back to work, there are questions on my mind. Is this going to last?
Yeah, the greater uncertainties, right?
Right. And so how long will it last? What changes will I meet in the workplace? There are some who are, we know that not everyone has been returned to work, even though the hotels are full and people, retail is back up and running and just about almost every sector is opened, but not all of those laid off people have gone back to work. So there's still this fear factor.
Let's stick a pin right there, Jeff, because, you know, and let's use the tourism as a microcosm of what could potentially happen. So it's early days yet, but the level of occupancy which is being reported is significantly high. I have heard numbers 50%. I don't know if that is true, but what I'm hearing is significantly high. It suggests, though, that proportionately, the level of occupancy is not correlating with the level of return employees based on what we know to have been normal. That, therefore, is an indication of what the possibilities are. Now, we can make the argument and we can rationalize, well, you know, everybody can't go back at one point in time, and this is a wait and see. But isn't there the possibility that as we progress, and by we I mean the businesses progress with less resources, they may innovate to find ways of doing more or doing as much as they could have in the past with less? And while there may be some persons coming back, isn't there the real stark possibility that of the 60% which is not yet returned, maybe another 50% of that may actually not be called back?
That is part of the change environment. That's another component of it. Because I think last summer, if you would recall, we had several conversations about this. And late into the fall, there was this commentary about, of the 100% of the people who've been laid off, 30% of them will never be called back. That's a real possibility, right? One of the things that's been happening globally is that the pandemic has forced employers and investors and business owners to rethink brick and mortar facilities, to rethink the number of staff that they had, and to really begin to be innovative about what do we need and how many people do we need to achieve the new result. So you will find that businesses are facing various levels of innovation, and all these changes are part of what makes this psyche of the employee returning to work a little bit more nervous. Mm-hmm. You're right. So you may find that employees will return to work and there is a change. What is that change? Let's say that I used to work in a restaurant and my station used to have 6 tables, right? Or 8 tables. Now my station has 12 tables. Okay. So he or she may find themselves.
I'm effectively doing 2 persons now.
Ah, 1.5 to twice what he used to have before. Mm. And he probably won't complain because 1, he's grateful to have a job. 2, there's still some people out there waiting to get my job. So he's now in a dilemma. I'm working harder for the same money, or maybe just a little bit more, but physically, mentally, I'm working twice as hard because my station is now expanded. So, and then he also knows that in this restaurant, with 30 of us, now there are only 21 of us working. Mm-hmm. And we are required to do the same job with less resources, manpower, and the whole 9 yards. These are some of the changes, Hubert, that we have to be realistic with, because guess what? It's not just happening here in the Bahamas. This has been a global trend in this pandemic environment where employers are saying, hey, wait a minute. We've had to scale down to almost 0 employees. Now, as we build back, what can we do to mitigate costs? Because now everybody knows that they can't make it all back in one swing. So these are just some of the other challenges that the work environment will create. Now, that unfortunately, that challenge in the workplace won't be left at the workplace by that employee when they punch out of the at the end of the day. They now must take that burden home. Because the same physical, mental, emotional person who's now struggling through this and is now struggling through these changes at work, right, now has to deal with that issue compounded to take that home and settle in and deal with his or her family member, his children, her children every single day. So it adds to the employee now has to think through these processes. He's got to process all of this in addition to trying to keep himself together, having returned to work after 14 months no work. So it speaks again to this issue of collective response. You've got the church, you've got the government, you've got the community, you've got civil society, you have Rotary, you have Kiwanis, you've got the
family and friends.
I was trying. Zonta was a group that I'm thinking about. All of these organizations who make up our community in good times must realize that it is our collective responsibility to come together and figure out how to man. Because I'll tell you this, Hubert, you know this: having a strong economy without healthy people,
right?
You really don't have much.
That's true.
You need functional people who are healthy people mentally, psychologically, and otherwise. And then, of course, the issue of, do I need to be vaccinated? Do I not need to be vaccinated? Some are now being told, you know, the challenge of determining who's going to pay for my testing. Yeah. All of those things help to make up this new dynamic of change in the workplace.
Yeah, because, certainly one of the things that this pandemic has introduced is a new set of uncertainty. Life is uncertain.
Yes.
There's a new set of uncertainty. We do not know what tomorrow is going to bring. We are dealing with the variants, the alpha, the delta, the gamma, the kappa, all of those Greeks. And so at the end of the day, the message, I think, which is coming out from Jeff, from myself here, is, hey, we too are looking to the return. Everyone ought to be looking forward to the return with optimism. but there's a level of realism which must prevail. And that realism is not just being, you know, hocus pocus over the moon cart wheeling. It's a realism which is necessary to keep us grounded and focused on the things which may go wrong and necessarily will go wrong, at least with some persons, if we are to ensure that the aspects of the community, the fabric of the community, which may not necessarily have been torn, but have been stretched, that we can now start to pull it back together. Because at the end of the day, you need properly, highly functional persons, persons who are socially comfortable, persons who mentally focus in order to drive the recovery that we are going to be looking for in the future. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'm going to flip the questions over to Mr. Beckers. But certainly we want to talk a little bit about the vaccination and the vaccine hesitant situation. We also want to talk about inflation. Inflation is ticking up in some very important places. You listen to The Essentials. Don't move. Come right back.
Enjoy an elevated mobile experience with BTC, giving you
unlimited talk for the best conversations,
unlimited data for all your online fun,
and unlimited roaming to stay connected while overseas.
For just $50 per line.
Unlock unlimited mobile talk, data, and roaming when you sign up for BTC Superfast Fiber Internet with speed starting at 100 megabits per second. Enjoy more great savings and value. Upgrade or sign up today. Visit any BTCBahamas.com. Conditions apply.
Sign up for CostRight membership and join the Savings Club. As a member, you get access to exclusive discounts on your favorite grocery club packs, appliances, electronics, outdoor living, and so much more. Whether shopping for your home or business, you can enjoy low warehouse prices on quality name brand products. Your CostRight membership also allows you to save at other participating businesses, and Gold Card members can earn an annual 2% reward up to $500. Sign up for the CostRight membership card today and let the savings begin.
For the best jerk in the Bahamas, you must have Balu's pork, fish, and chicken served with our delicious country-style sauce and authentic festivals. Balu's, Nassau East South. Call or WhatsApp 376-8951. Balu's, the jerk with the soul of reggae and the spirit of Junkanoo. Balu's jerk, traditional, slow-cooked to perfection. 376-8951. Get yours today.
Is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back. We want to say to all the persons who are listening, we are thankful for you joining us. If you want to participate, the numbers are 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. And for the persons who are watching us via Facebook streaming live, if you actually want to call us, all you need to do is to put 1242 before that number. Jeffrey Beckles is always, always open to answering your question. We have a situation here, Jeff, of vaccination and vaccine hesitancy, as it's referred to. Then you have the other persons who are referred to as the anti-vax, and but you know, we're not going to get into, you know, that type of deep ism. The fact of the matter is, I saw it was today, which lists or rank the countries within the Caribbean in terms of vaccination as a percentage of the population. At the bottom of the chart, I think, is Jamaica or some country. Jamaica is close to the bottom. The Bahamas is close to the bottom at, I think, 9%. And then it continues up to with some of the smaller population countries, so those in the Lesser Antilles. The ability to protect the economy, largely because most of the economy is built and reliant on tourism, is going to be a function of the extent to which we have greater levels of vaccination in the country. Isn't that the case?
It is very much the case.
But we have a dilemma.
We do.
We have two situations here. One, there is a significant level of hesitancy. Level of hesitancy, right? I think can be overcome by talking to people, convincing them, and so on and so forth. But unfortunately, I think this is compounded by the fact that there is also a non-availability, as we speak, of the actual vaccine itself. I think it was only today that we got report that the next supply is due sometime in the third quarter. This is not a good situation for the overall recovery of the economy, is it?
No. In a simple answer, no. I did read the release, and it indicated that there would be additional vaccines in the third quarter, right? But let me just go back a little bit. Globally, there's been this vaccine back and forth, and vaccine hesitancy is not peculiar to the Bahamas. We are at, I think, 9 to 11% of some sort. And then at one point, we had heard that we were trying to get 200,000 Bahamians vaccinated. Whether or not one agrees or doesn't agree with the vaccine, the reality of it is people must feel confident that they can indeed get the vaccine. And I must acknowledge that there has been so much in the discussion about the vaccine that the whole global discussion has been really doing a disservice to the trust factor, right? Whether or not you agree or not agree, the issue is we have politicized, we the world, have politicized this whole issue of vaccinations to the point where we've polluted it. It doesn't help that social media, anybody can get on a platform and say yay or nay. Social media has exacerbated the problem. But at the end of the day, in an environment where we are dependent on tourism, where we need, where we have to encourage interactions with people, there must be a narrative that informs, provides education on a consistent basis to deflect some of the fake news from the truth and facts. There has to be a careful consideration given to who's actually speaking this message.
I wish
because
you
that's important too.
The reality though is the noise. The noise is so significant and consistent. It's absolutely difficult to get in sideways, headways, rightways, however way you want to try. It's really difficult to have a rational conversation. And there is I think there's a fear factor, but there is also emerging in this old discussion, this sovereignty of self, which is an important concept, because you know I should be given the space to be my sovereign self, and I should be able to decide what goes in me and what doesn't. And not that there's any official position which is taking that away. Certainly in the Bahamas, there's no one saying you have to take the vaccine. But there is a compelling reason for those in authority to say, do it. Because our faith, our fortunes really rest fundamentally on us being in the best position of not having a widespread increase in this virus again. And in this instance, the new versions, the new variants, which could be a huge game changer this time for us in the Bahamas.
I think you go back to, you're right to an extent, and I think you go back to the issue of sovereign self. I have a right to make the determination whether I want to take the vaccine or not, right? But then we have to be careful not to create a narrative that says, if you don't, I'll hit you in the head with a hammer.
Right.
Now, while it's your choice, but just remember there's a hammer coming your way. How is that hammer coming in my way? Because when I get told as a Bahamian that this is good for you, but right, and I'm already in a hesitancy position. But then, you know, you start hearing narrative like, well, if you don't take the vaccine, you can't go here, you can't go there, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't. Or the potential for me to not have a job if I choose, as you say, I have the right to, not to take the vaccine. So I think we have to be careful in how we are mixing the narrative and the words we're using, because on one hand, we understand that the pandemic is real, right? We understand that people have died. We understand that people have gotten sick. And many people I know have gotten sick and died from COVID. However, I think I don't know that we are doing ourselves the best possible justice by the manner in which we communicate it. Mm-hmm. What is the narrative? What is this a challenge for us? And what is the benefit of taking this virus, vaccine? And if so, then let's talk about the value and the benefit of that, health wise and otherwise. Because I go back to what I said earlier, so that I don't contradict myself. There's no point in us having a vibrant, robust, chosen product if we got a bunch of unhealthy people. So from the start, the narrative has been the careful balance between protecting the lives of our people so that we can eventually restore livelihoods, mm-hmm. right? But then let's be careful, though, at the same time, not to tell me or to tell you, if you don't take it, you're going to lose. So I think it goes back to building confidence. Mm-hmm. There are countries who are showing some good results. Now we've got a ton of variants out there. And, you know, I think in a short time, we'll probably have as many variants as we do letters in the alphabet. The situation will get progressively worse as projected by immunity in those countries where vaccination rates are low, like they are in the Bahamas.
And that is important, right?
And that's an important thing to consider if we are going to do, as we say, spend the energy, spend the resources, rebuilding our tourism sector, opening up all of these other sectors, then we have to strike that balance between how do we do that safely and securely, given now not just the pandemic, SARS-2, I think it is. Now we've got all the variants that have come out of this. It's our problem is now compounded.
It is. You have these, and the variants are said to be, when I interviewed Dr. Duane Davis, mm-hmm. Recently, this week, as a matter of fact, indicating that in 104 countries, the variants are there. The likelihood, in his words, if it is happening, the likelihood of it being here is, you know, almost 100%. But there is additional thing which is emerging, Jeff. And I know, you know, like I said, this is a fireside chat, so I'm going to drag you all over the place today.
That's all right.
Vaccine diplomacy is one which is emerging. Then there is the rich country, poor country scenario, where we find that even though there is this level of hesitancy, which caused big countries like the United States and Canada to have relatively low take up on the vaccine, countries like the Bahamas, countries out of Africa, countries in other places in the Caribbean, countries like, for example, Haiti. I understand Haiti was only today deliver 500,000 vaccines. You know, this is a country with 11 million people, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And they, through the COVAX facility, finally got 500,000. And so we have this scenario developing, which pre-COVID, it would have been, hey, you know, this is first world versus third world. We have a better currency, stronger currency, that sort of thing, right? Here it is where we have the potential to see the world, the developing world in the main, make big steps backward as a result of the inability to manage and balance that tension between economics and health, because right now, you know, whether you like it or not, whether you anti-vax or not, whether you hesitant or not, jab, as it's referred to, is the most potent measure of confidence that we see anywhere in the world, which is having a positive impact on economic outcome. What say you, Jeff?
I agree to an extent. I will say this. I just go back to this vaccine diplomacy, right? Rich country, poor country. And I mentioned earlier the politics of this whole COVID matter, right? The behavior of the haves and the have-nots is largely contributing to some of the doubt, right? That exists globally, and there's no doubt some of it exists in our own country. When you have the haves saying, well, we'll see what we could do. But then you just agreed the other day that this is a global emergency. Well, we'll see what we could do, right? We'll see if we can help them. But did we not see the same thing in food exports in the heart of the pandemic last year, where countries with the food said, we'll see what we could do to help those who don't have? So you'll find that this whole COVID scenario is going to play out in the typical way that geopolitics plays out.
Definitely.
At the end of the day, somebody is going to pay for that behavior. And unfortunately, that's going to be paid in lives. Now, so when we start talking about vaccine diplomacy, while I'm happy that we have seen some overtures to by larger countries to help out smaller countries, we've lost a lot of time. Okay? Conversation was about saving lives. Then what's the need for all of this shucking and jiving, as we used to say back in the day, right? Mm-hmm. The reality of it is we would have been moved quickly. We would have been moved to make more rational decisions to ensure that people had access to vaccines.
That, Jeff, is important, right? Because the narrative, the rhetoric says it's about life.
Yep.
But the actual action suggests that we are not giving this up for nothing. We are going to leverage our position, our fortunate position, for something. While it may not be asked for in the brightness of daylight, you can bet your bottom dollar that the speed at which it is moving suggests that there is more happening in the boiler room. Now, it may be a function of just pure unadulterated geopolitics, but it may also be the farmer is flexing its muscle and saying, hey, what about us? There is a profit position here. There is a profit motivation. Even though we want to save the world, we want, when the world is saved, we are much richer than we were before this crisis. So I think there is a multiplicity and a complex set of issues which are happening. So, you know, if you like Biden or you don't like Biden, you may think, if you like him, that he is, you know, speaking in the right direction. But if you observe the speak over time, then you start to say, well, you know, what is causing this timeliness to evaporate when the thing that we are dealing with, by its nature and through the experience of over 16 months or almost 2 years, we understand that it is such a time-sensitive issue that the deliberations ought not to be that long?
That's because it appears that there is a set of people prepared to control the urgency.
To slow it down.
Yeah.
Because there's value in it going slowly.
There's no doubt. The guy with the gold makes the rules. That's something we've known for a very long, long time. Mm-hmm. And again, this is not something that's speculative. We read the commentary by the producers of vaccines, and they said, hey, wait a minute. We can't just let y'all produce this without a dollar, you know what I mean? You got to put something in the can. And that may be reasonable to an extent. But to the extent to which the conversation is halted globally, that results in countries not being able to access this life-saving regimen, then that's to me, it conflicts with the global sense of urgency that was declared earlier.
Yeah, the potential for the can to be irrelevant in a real serious way, right?
Yeah.
Yes, you can, but the potential for the can to be irrelevant to me is should give greater impetus and create a greater imperative for us to want to solve this. It seems as if for the first time, the world, well, maybe not for the first time, but certainly in mine and your lifetime, the world has been presented with a dangerous opportunity. Put it that way. It's an opportunity, but it's dangerous. But an opportunity for us to really embrace this whole idea of brotherhood and to really think about, hey, in order to save me, at least selfishly, think about it selfishly, in order to save us, we need to make sure that everybody else is safe. The argument is recognized. It is spoken of over and repeatedly, but it is acted out in a totally different and conflicting ways. And so I think ultimately, like you said, there is going to be some price to be paid from this. And unfortunately, it is countries like ourselves, Bahamas, is in
Very much so.
Better position than many others who I think will suffer or potentially could suffer immensely from the impact of this. And that is why when we talk about this pandemic and persons talking about it being over, this is going to, and we are not going to fully appreciate the totality of the impact until we get back as close to normal as is possible, then we realize that this normal is nothing like the normal we knew before the pandemic.
Agreed, because remember now, this pandemic is unlike any of the others we would have had. We talked about them being occurring every 100 years. This one almost has phases, right? Based on what's being told to us, right? In that, now that we've gone through the phase of 2020 and early 2021, and now with the new variants, and we've got to look at the possibility of taking booster shots in the next year, and then in the following year we have to take another booster shot. Mm-hmm. The reality of it is, this is going to be the ramifications of this, the impact of this particular pandemic is going to be felt for a much longer period of time. Remember, there was a time, though, when agricultural producers around the world, right? Mm-hmm. And then there was a time when the oil producers, the petrochemical, they ran the world, right? Now they're talking about big pharma running the world. I think we're going to continue to see these kinds of phases that appears to be segmented by sectors that says, okay, well, it's your turn, it's your turn, it's your turn. Oil producing countries having less and less impact, even though they're important, but they're not as big as they used to be 30 years ago.
Yes.
Today, the pharmaceutical industry appears now to be the ones leading the charge. I was reading an article in the American Journal of Medicine that said, I think it was 66 or 67% of North Americans were on some form of prescription
medication.
That's a big number.
It is.
Now, look at the Bahamas and look at the increasing number of Bahamians who are on medication.
Mm-hmm.
One of the challenges I have with this particular pandemic is that the narrative about the other side of the cure, the healthier side of it, the natural side of it, things that we ought to be doing while we're learning more about this pandemic. In my estimation, we have fallen short of our people a good service globally. And of course, here in the Bahamas, we're not talking enough about those things. What can we be doing as a people?
Yes.
In addition, while we learn more about this, mm-hmm. while we try to understand it, because there are some natural things that we ought to be consuming and remedies that we ought to be applying that we are not speaking about. That is a concern for me as a human being.
Yeah.
That is a concern for me as a Bahamian. I have children. You know, I want to be able to ensure that the community in which I live is equally as exposed to alternatives or things that we can do in conjunction with. Mm-hmm. And we're not, in my estimation, not doing a good enough job in that regard.
That
now, some may say it's because we are already a sick country, but all of us are sick.
No. Yeah, we're not that sick, but there is an opportunity. That's an opportunity which has been
missed. There's an opportunity.
We're going to take ourselves a break here, and then when we come back on the other side, want to shift to a couple of other things. This quote this week, and I think it resonates, and I want to throw this out again, because I honestly believe that some of us here in the Bahamas, maybe in the region around the world, are sitting open and praying feverishly for the good times to come back, for the time that we knew before. It was Admiral James Stockdale, an individual, he's from the United States. He was a prisoner of war, World War II, and he was captured. And he spent his time in captivity with a number of individuals. And he created a situation when he was being interviewed, which is now referred to as the Stockdale Paradox. Because he said to those who were interviewing him that as he observed it, it was the optimists, the people who were most optimistic, who died first. And they asked him, why is this so? And he said, because they created this unrealistic expectation. And they said to themselves, we will be out of here by Easter. And then Easter came and passed, and they say, we will be out of here by fall, and fall came and passed, and they say, we will definitely be gone by December. December came and passed, and Easter returned. They became despondent, and they gave up on the will to live. I think there is a message here which says, you must never confuse faith that you will prevail in the end, which you can never afford to lose, with the brutal facts of your current reality, whatsoever they may be. The message, ladies and gentlemen, is let's deal with what is in front of us. And while we hope for a better day, do not allow that which we hope for to impact, to take away, to denigrate our effort from fixing and dealing with the things that we are faced with right here, right now, in the moment, because dealing with those is the pathway, is the guardrail, is the access through which we are going to enjoy that which we are open for. You listen to The Essentials. I have with me my guest, Jeff Beckles, and we're having this conversation. It's a conversation. I'm not interviewing him tonight. He's just talking, telling us his view, and I'm butting in from time to time. So I don't want you to move. We want to come back. And when we get back, we'll be in the last segment of the show, a discussion around the Bahamas. We want to talk a little bit about inflation when we get back, because that has the potential of derailing a number of issues which we need to go right. Come right back. Don't move.
Enjoy an elevated mobile experience with BTC giving you
unlimited talk for the best conversations,
unlimited data for all your online fun,
and unlimited roaming to stay connected while overseas
for just $50 per line.
Unlock unlimited mobile talk, data, and roaming when you sign up for BTC super fast fiber internet with speed starting at 100 megabits per second. Enjoy more great savings and value. Upgrade or sign up today. Visit any BTC store or btcbahamas.com. Conditions apply.
Sign up for Costrite membership and join the Savings Club. As a member, you get access to exclusive discounts on your favorite grocery club packs, appliances, electronics, outdoor living, and so much more. Whether shopping for your home or business, you can enjoy low warehouse prices on quality name brand products. Your Costrite membership also allows you to save at other participating businesses, and Gold Card members can earn an annual 2% reward up to $500. Sign up for the Costrite membership card today and let the savings begin.
For the best jerk in the Bahamas, you must have Balu's. Pork, fish, and chicken served with our delicious country-style sauce and authentic festivals. Balu's, Nassau East South. Call or WhatsApp 376-8951. Balu's, the jerk with the soul of reggae and the spirit of Junkanoo. Balu's jerk, traditional, slow-cooked to perfection. 376-8951. Get yours today.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to The Essentials. We have in ourselves a fantastic discussion. I'm enjoying it. I think it's a bit of a different type of a conversation, but it's an important one nonetheless. Jeff, as we move out into greater normalcy, and as commerce start to churn and persons start to move forward in their business, start to create a little bit of a momentum, one of the things that we are noticing is that the impact that COVID would have had on the various supply chains is now biting us in a very significant way, especially within the construction industry, which is one which is so, so important to the Bahamas. Talk to us about, from your perspective, and to help listeners to understand this concept of imported inflation and how that could really represent bad news for the Bahamas.
Wow, thank you so much. Let me just say this before I continue. I appreciate the comment that you made at the close of that last segment about being an optimist, but more importantly, being true to yourself and you know, speaking truth to yourself. It's important that, and we'll get into more of that as the months and the weeks come upon us. But this environment has taught us something very valuable in the Bahamas, a valuable lesson that we typically traditionally wouldn't pay much attention to as consumers or business owners, and that is called the supply chain, and the fact that the supply chain for basic things that we've taken for granted, I would say, over the years has been interrupted globally, right? I was just reading today how, you know, we even the car rental agencies, even though people are traveling again and doing a great job taking vacations, they are running out of cars to rent because during the pandemic, the major car rental companies sold off most of their inventory. And now they don't have enough cars to rent. Why? Because they can't find, the car production has slowed down because they can't find to make the cars work. Mm-hmm. And so there's a knockoff effect. In April of this year, a used truck, average price went up $5,000 just in the month of April. Why? They couldn't find trucks anywhere in the United States. And so you're finding the same thing happening with cars now. The prices of cars are going up 8, 9, 12. In one estimation, I was reading 15% just for a new car, right? In the Bahamas, we don't typically pay attention to supply chain matters. Today, we're paying more for food than we've paid. I think any of us can go to the store today and see how inconsistent the food supplies are one week to week, right? Difficult to get things. you go into the construction sector, recently said that construction costs in the Bahamas have risen as much as 20%+ just in the last several months. Why? They can't get access to basic construction material. Mm-hmm. I went to purchase some plywood the other day and paid, the guy told me plywood was $72 a sheet.
Wow.
When a year ago, I paid $30 for the same sheet of plywood.
Mm-hmm.
That's a reality.
You know, one of the most prominent example of seeing, and it just jump out at you, where someone made a pile of ply and lumber, right? That $1,000 would buy in 2018.
Yeah, I saw that. Yes.
And then put together the same amount purchasable with $1,000 in 2021. And believe me,
barely a third of it.
Your youngest child, just out of kindergarten, could manage the 2021. And so it suggests the extent to which it has the potential to change lifestyle, to change production, to change standard of living, and to create a situation where we may even find ourselves deferring significant investment decisions, such as building and so on, which then in and of itself has a knock on the economy, because part of this thing which drives the economy is construction starts.
Yes.
It's an important and fundamentally influential measurement within the economy. When you pick up the central bank reports these days, you see the number of construction start to be significantly lower. We understand coming out of COVID itself because of the need for social distancing.
Right.
But that trend is likely to continue, not because of the social distancing need, but because of the new cost structure which has been imposed on it.
Well, you remember about a year ago, we, in our efforts with the chamber, and kudos to the chamber for its efforts in getting the construction sector back up and running. The construction sector was one of the few first to get the green light to reopen.
Mm-hmm.
But to your point, a year later, it slowed down, and the contributions to our to the country's revenue really contingent a lot on construction. So we're seeing the impact of that. Now, remember, from a consumer standpoint, if we can back it out just a little bit, well, the consumer now is going to defer any home improvements, mm-hmm. any new home starts, because his price per square foot has just gone up exponentially. He or she can't afford it.
Yeah, no.
Right? And particularly in an environment where lending is even more stringent today than it has ever been. So there is going to be, to your point earlier, a deferment by consumers. I won't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. We just can't afford to, right? And so that has a knock-off effect too, because the construction company is going to be sitting there saying, but we don't have work. Why you don't have work? It's because people are deferring these projects because they can't afford it. Two, you can't get the material anyhow. So why am I going to invest? We were going to buy a new vehicle about 2 months ago. And a different vehicle, not a new vehicle, but we were going to buy a different vehicle. And we made, after we got through the process, we said, hey, wait a minute. We started to look and begin to realize, do we really need to add this additional expense to our lives right now? Mm-hmm. Now, we had a good reason why we wanted to buy it, but we made a decision, even though we could afford it, we said, you know what? Now is not the time.
Right.
So we deferred it. Rather, we said we will take that same money and repurpose that money against what? The reality of the impact of inflation and other things that are going to come, other challenges going to come our way.
Exactly.
Do you remember a year ago, oil producers were giving away oil? Remember that?
Yeah, man. you know, please, we'll pay you.
If you take this order from us, Pat, we'll give it to you. It's minus $10 a barrel. Take it.
Yes.
Do you realize today in the Bahamas, gas is $5.10 a gallon?
Yep.
Almost $1.30 more than it was a year ago?
Yep. And that's largely because of supply chain issues.
And supply chains, the impact of supply chains. Yep. So why, what's important for us as a takeaway for this in the Bahamas is that we as consumers, we expect our government to do better, but the government is living and working in the same environment we're working in too. So the challenges we face as consumers, they now are facing on a national level. The point is, we must all begin now to look at how we manage the limited resources. The resources we have, which are limited, because even though I may have returned to work, my dollar that I earned, that I'm working twice as hard for today, is now getting me far less. Yeah.
The purchasing power is certainly down.
I
want to throw something else at you, Jeff, because, you know, oftentimes we think about the economy in macro sense. So, and we poke fun at it too. Everybody does. It's a two-hour stone, right? It's tourism and it's financial services. But there's a part of the Bahamas economy which is very, very interesting. It is these fancy offices which someone is always tearing down and building up back, right? The leasehold properties, which one, now they're going to be expensive in terms of leasehold improvement. And two, some people realize, well, we don't need them buildings no more. We can work from home. All of our staff can work from home. And we now have a part of the product sector which generated and contributed to our GDP, which is likely to see changes, a shift, retrenchment in some very, very important ways, which is going to have a knock-on impact on contractors, the persons that they employ, all the way down to the Joe Blow in the street.
Just before the pandemic, in an unrelated conversation, one of my associates in the real estate business told me that there was about 1 million square feet of vacant space, office space, and rentable space in Nassau alone. 1 million square feet. And I think any of us who pay attention, go downtown, drive into Palmdale, drive out up west, up east, whatever, we would have begun to see a trend of vacant buildings, right? Just sitting there. Today, many of those buildings lie uninhabited, which is, to your point, is going to create not only an environment where there's now 2 or 3 million square feet of office space and retail space available, but now those 3 million square feet have no occupants, which means that no one's paying CAM charges, no one is paying lease, no one is prepared to pay leasehold improvements. Now we've got a bigger problem because those buildings need to be maintained because that's somebody's investment, right? To your other point, those persons who used to occupy that building, the owner of that business is saying, hey, wait a minute. We are generating significant productivity with less than 10% of our people in the actual office space that used to be occupied by the 100%. We don't need this space anymore.
No.
So whether you own it or whether you are leasing it, somebody now has to pay the burden of carrying that unoccupied space because now that production and that output is being generated elsewhere for far less. But that too, Hubert, poses another problem. We talked about the change in the workplace, right? Well, now the employee is going to start to change his view of this because they're going to say, hey, wait a minute. I'm using my own electricity.
Yes.
I'm using my own internet. In fact, many homes have had to increase their internet service in order for work to be done. I am taking all the risk at home to produce work for my boss on the same base. So guess what? Someone's going to come up with this fancy idea, and it has already happened. Hey, boss, can you compensate me for my additional power and my additional internet and water and everything else, because I'm actually working for you at home. So I'm actually funding
like an independent
your office
consultant right now.
So it, again, it's a change dynamic. But back to the point, though, it has a knock-on effect on productivity, mm-hmm. and also ultimately jobs and income.
Yes, and I think it's important that, you know, and it's not to be negative in any way.
Right.
I think all we're simply saying is this. While we are in total communion and brotherhood in praying for the best to return and the best to come, we have to be wise. We have to be prudent, and we have to be realistic and understand the dynamics at play. Why is it important to do that? Well, you may be saying, well, what Jeff just said sound nice because he speaks well, but I don't own no leasehold business, so I don't care. All of the things that Jeff spoke about earlier sound nice, but that don't mean nothing to me. The fact that we are in this arrangement called country, the fact that we're impacted by this arrangement called the Bahamas economy, the fact that we are all here and we are provided with service provided by the government, whether you like government or not like government, the government provides certain services on your behalf because you put the government, well, you elect the representatives and you put them there to work for you. At the end of the day, when things go wrong in a macro way to a micro impact,
yes,
and ultimately, it will come home to Young Street and Ida Street and Mini Street. I'm only talking to a couple of streets that I know. I don't know this place as well as Jeff do. It will certainly come home on Oxford Road and East Street. It always come back to the individual. And so to the extent that we are mindful, I'll let you go in a bit, Jeff.
To the extent
that we are going to be mindful that we are all in this game together and we have a role to play and the adjustments that will be made will impact all of us. I think when we ready our mind in that direction, we are always going to be better off because, you know, we're going to rid ourselves of some of the anxieties which may need to pop up. All right, make your point, Jeff, because we have one last thing to talk about in the next 9 minutes.
Yeah, and just to your point, the guy who might say, I don't own any square footage, I mean, or I own the building, rah, 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 I don't care, it doesn't affect me. If I were to sum it up in a single word, it's an ecosystem. Yeah. And regardless of where you are in your life, you are a part of the ecosystem because while you may not own the building and may not have that particular issue, what you must be concerned about is the gentleman or lady who is impacted by that no longer has the ability to patronize your business at the level he or she once had. So you have to be concerned about that. And so that's what I will say in response to that, because none of us can escape the impact. Now, it may impact us in different ways, but none of us can escape the impact of supply demands of that.
Yeah, unfortunately, in an ecosystem, in an animal ecosystem, somebody, one entity, is always at the bottom and get totally consumed by everything else above. So there are entities which will survive. There are persons,
yes,
certain strata, which will do well. They will struggle, but they will do well.
And let me make this one last comment about that.
Go ahead.
You're right. Something else that we have to be true to ourselves about, and going back to Stockdale's comment and about our perspective. Mm-hmm. Whenever you have this kind of impact, there are always losses.
Yes.
Right? And that's not to be pessimistic. But my, I want us to be careful in that you cannot have this magnitude of impact without some collateral damage. Mm-hmm. Because not everyone will survive it. Not every business will be able to bounce back. Not every idea is going to be able to be developed because the timing may not be right. There are going in this recovery, and we must be prepared to accept that as a part of this evolution of change, as we work together to salvage, as it were, mm-hmm. and to rebuild coming out of this pandemic.
I think it's an important point, and where I was going to take that is a recognition that there's a food chain of sorts here.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And we must be prepared to protect those at the bottom of the food chain.
Yes. Because we can't just dismiss them as vulnerable, exactly. and plan their demise. We must be prepared to support them.
We must be prepared. You know, like I said, Jeff is going to be okay. He is a good one in this whole conversation. I am going to struggle, but I might be okay. Another person may find it absolutely, I've absolutely no way of being okay by themselves.
Mm.
And this is where, despite my struggle, and certainly with Jeff's affluent position, we must come together to make sure that those who are most vulnerable are taken care of. And this is why, Jeff, we come to the very last point where we have only a couple of minutes to discuss the burden of the country. The fact that we need to get to a place where the country grows, which is going to be very difficult. I'm not talking about the growth that we're going to realize over the next year and the next year as a result of the losses that we had to the economy. I'm talking about real sustained growth after we bounce back. And the extent to which we will do in this recovery process facilitate citizen empowerment. I want you to wrap that up in just a couple of minutes because I think this is where the action is. A lot of the other things that we talk about definitely will happen for the most part. But in order to solve those things, we have to now start to look 5 years, 10 years down the road. How are we going to right the ship of state in such a way that we will be whittling at the negatives over a period of time until everybody is good again? Shoot.
Wow. Let me just say this. This issue of debt and economic recovery has to be taken out of the context of politics, right? Because numbers don't lie, they are what they are. Now, you could say what you want about the numbers, but they are what they are. And I think it's high time that we begin to have very rational discussions where the average Bahamian can first understand the state of affairs in the country, in that we have a tendency to talking about the state of affairs of our economy to the point where the average Bahamian becomes disinterested. But we must change that narrative so that when we start talking about growth, it does matter, yes, but it matters even more when people understand what needs where we are and what needs to be done. To the point where I don't think we should continue to underestimate the average Bahamian because we are a lot more sophisticated than most people give us credit for. We can't understand. I think it's incumbent upon leaders collectively to begin to speak to Bahamians in terms that we understand. We are in a bit of a pickle. We are in trouble financially. Our debt is ballooning out of control. Is it a path that we could continue to be on and expect a good result? Obviously not. So then let's be fair and let's be frank about that reality. But more so, let's be fair, frank, and reasonable about what is required to slow that borrowing down, what is required to stem the tide, and what is required to improve our income such that it's not just about whether or not we have the ability to service debt, because you still have the debt. The issue is, how do we manage a country where we can really talk about growth, where we can grow our revenues and create opportunities where more Bahamians can actually get to work and contribute. I think the way forward is for us to be very honest in the first instance and to be very practical about where we are, and without all the music, without all the bells, without all the whistles, and engage Bahamians. I am of the view that the financial crisis that we have in our country is not beyond the capacity of the gifted Bahamians who live in this country and those who live here and call it home. If you, Hubert, were to understand the talent we have in the Bahamas, globally and resident, the gifted people who actually reside here with our own knowledge, there's no way that we could not flesh through a very dynamic solution to help this country curb its financial path that we're on right now, because it's unsustainable, yes, but we have to be very honest, very practical, and we have to be prepared to speak to our people about what is necessary from all of us at all levels to arrest this vexing issue.
I totally agree with you. And the way I have put it, not as eloquent as you are, I have always said it's time to change the narrative.
Yeah.
It's time to change the narrative to a state of we can do, we must do, and to highlight the possibilities. Because at the end of the day, all of us find ourselves in the same pickle.
Yes.
And I hope that what we have done here this evening is to not start, but to continue a discourse, which I am convinced is kind of the direction in which it needs to be had. Because if we have this discourse with a significant overlay of honesty, and when you use the word honesty, somebody always assumes that somebody else is not being honest. That's not what we're saying here. We're simply saying, confront the brutal facts, as Viktor Frankl said, Stockdale says. Confront the brutal facts, because they are the obstacles to a better tomorrow. Remember, while you must be optimistic, remember while we want you to have faith that tomorrow is going to be better, blind faith doesn't get you anywhere. You have to. Jeff, we have absolutely about 30 seconds for your wrap-up word. So what is it that you want to leave us with?
Thank you, Hubert. The only thing I want to say is this. This is going to be a collective effort. Non-political, but Bahamian. We must be prepared on a social level to be prepared to support our brother's keeper. And we can do that by building stronger communities, by being prepared to chip in. I believe that we can do it. And then finally, I think we must give ourselves a fair chance by embracing the collective expertise and talent we have in this country and be prepared to ask for help when we don't know what to do next.
I think that's a good place to leave it. Ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to The Essential. I will again invoke Viktor Frankl when he says, man does not simply exist, but always decide what his existence will be, what he will become the next moment. By the same token, every human being has the freedom to change at any instant. We have, therefore, the ability to change our future, to change our reality, to change our existence. You have been listening to The Essentials. I'm your host, Hubert Edwards. Good night.
Enjoy an elevated mobile experience with BTC giving you
unlimited talk for the best conversations,
unlimited data for all your online fun,
and unlimited roaming to stay connected while overseas.
For just $50 per line.
Unlock unlimited mobile talk, data, and roaming when you sign up for BTC super fast fiber internet with speed starting at 100 megabits per second. Enjoy more great savings and value. Upgrade or sign up today. Visit any BTC store or btcbahamas.com. Conditions apply.
Sign up for CostRight membership and join the Savings Club. As a member, you get access to exclusive discounts on your favorite grocery club packs, appliances, electronics, outdoor living, and so much more. Whether shopping for your home or business, you can enjoy warehouse prices on quality name brand products. Your CostRight membership also allows you to save at participating businesses, and Gold Card members can earn an annual 2% reward up to $500. Sign up for the CostRight membership card today and let the savings begin.
for the jerk in the Bahamas, you must have Baloo's. Pork, fish, and chicken served with our delicious country-style sauce and authentic festivals. Baloo's, Nassau East South. Call or WhatsApp 376-8951. Baloo's, the jerk with the soul of and the spirit of Junkanoo. Baloo's jerk, traditional, slow-cooked to perfection. 376-8951. Get yours today.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
This program is a rebroadcast of a previously aired program.
96.9 FM, fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.